We're learning Yoshua, and we had learned about the 12 stones that Yoshua erected in the Jordan, the 12 stones that they took up to Gilgal, and then they wrote the Torah in 70 languages, and then they went to Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. They had the blessings and the curses, and then they brought them back with them to Gilgal, where they camped that first night. We drew Gilgal on our map over here. I don't know if the Gilgal they draw on the maps is as accurate. I don't know. And we learned about how the Kohanim were levitated across the Jordan into the land of Israel. And when the nations heard about how we miraculously entered the land of Israel with the Jordan splitting, so then everyone got scared. They didn't have any strength to stand up to us.
Did they find these stones again today?
They definitely had them then. Nowadays, I'm unaware of any archaeological finding of the stones. Now we do an amazing thing. We do circumcision. All the years we were traveling throughout the desert, the Jewish people were not circumcising. There are two understandings as to what happened here. One understanding is that they actually circumcised everyone. They took sharp stones, and that's the knife that was used in the time of until the time of David. They used to use stones, very, very sharp stones. They have stone knives even today. So they had swords made of stoneware. So they had very sharp knives made of stones, and they used that to circumcise people, and that's why they had a little hill of foreskins from all these people who were circumcised. That's a simple reading. Our tradition is that until the Jews entered the land of Israel, they had only half the mitzvah of circumcision. When we circumcise a person, we take off the foreskin. I'll give you a quick picture, excuse the pun, of what a circumcision is. And then after you take off the foreskin, there's another layer, there's a membrane under the foreskin, which in the days of Yoshua, they had a tradition that once they entered the land of Israel, they would have to peel back that membrane. I'll just throw it on the board for a second. When a baby's born, if we look over here, this is the side angle of the male organ. This is the red tip, the gland. This is the white lower part. There's a skin that comes from the bottom of the baby's stomach. Right? If we're looking like a bird's eye view at the organ. So there's a skin that comes up to here. We slice off this part of the skin, and what we're left with is heels, and what we're left with is what we see, a circumcised organ. You see the red gland on the outside, and you see white skin on bottom. Technically, there's a membrane that comes out here from the bottom of the gland and attaches itself here. And after you cut off the skin, you still have most of the membrane here. You have to peel it back. So that they did not do when they left the land of Israel, when they left the land of Egypt. Now when they entered the land of Israel, they had a tradition that when they'd enter the land of Israel, they would have to do this as well as part of the circumcision. Till today, you'll see that when they do circumcision, there's a two-step process. They slice and then they peel back the membrane. And then that membrane glues itself on and heals up on the back side, just under the membrane, just under the gland, just under the red part. That membrane heals. So they do these mass circumcisions. Now, that's a very scary thing. You have a whole army that's incapacitated. That's how Shimon and Levi conquered all of Shechem, right? Because the people of Shechem had all circumcised and no one was ready to stand up to war. So you had one tribe who was fit for war, the tribe of Levi. All the years throughout the desert, they would circumcise. It was dangerous to circumcise in the desert. But it was a danger that was borderline. Sometimes in halacha we say something is so dangerous, it's prohibited. A person has different medical issues, it's prohibited for them to fast on Yom Kippur. Because it's a medical danger. There are certain things that are dangerous and are prohibited in halacha. Then other things are not dangerous, so they're permitted in halacha. Then you have things that are on the border. There are things which are dangerous enough that if you consider it dangerous, you shouldn't do it. And if you feel you're not so worried about it, you're permitted to do it. So that's what they say about traveling on certain roads. There are certain roads which some people will say, that's dangerous. So then they shouldn't travel there if they feel that's dangerous. Other people will say, almost nothing ever happens there. Yeah, every so often you hear about it in the news, but it's a rarity. So they're not worried about traveling there. So some roads will have that. So that's also what happened here with the circumcision. As they were traveling in the desert, most of the people of Israel looked at it and said, that's too dangerous. If we circumcise now, children can die. It's not healthy to circumcise out in the desert. The air is standing still. It's not moving. And as such, it can easily get infected. It can easily cause a child to die. So all 11 tribes did not circumcise in the desert. The tribe of Levi said, we're not so worried about it. We have a mitzvah, we're not worried about it. And they circumcised all those 40 years in the desert. They circumcised their kids. So now we enter the land of Israel. All these adults have circumcisions. It's a very painful thing to do for an adult. Very different than a child. Because on an adult, you're cutting a much larger amount of skin. And you're cutting larger veins. So now they've entered the land of Israel in the month of Nisan. They have to bring the Paschal offering. You cannot bring the Paschal offering when anyone in the family is uncircumcised. So everyone's circumcising. And now the first celebration they have in the land of Israel is the celebration of Pesach. So they've spent a few days in the land of Israel, under a week. They've circumcised and everyone does the Paschal offering. And they're standing opposite Jericho. You see Jericho, just east, slightly north of Jerusalem, right? So they've crossed the Jordan, they're standing east of Jericho, and they're all looking at Jericho as they do the Paschal offering.
Is that also where they did the circumcision, just east of Jericho?
It would seem that way, but I'm not sure.
That's a pretty dry, arid place to do it also.
I hear you. I don't know. Now, until that point, the man they had brought into Israel with them, the man they had now for 40 days since Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, the man held out. It was miraculous. And now, once they brought the Paschal offering in the morning after Pesach, were permitted to eat from the new grains, right? We bring the Omer sacrifice the morning after Pesach. So then from that point onward, they could eat from the grains of the land of Israel, and they no longer had man. Suddenly it was all used up, and they started eating from the produce of the land of Israel. Yoshua is standing opposite Jericho. It's night, and he sees a man standing opposite him. It's an angel, and his sword is drawn out. And Yoshua is different than the leaders of the nations. The leaders of Israel have a responsibility to lead to war. So when Yoshua sees someone standing with their sword outstretched, he doesn't call anyone. He himself runs forward and charges. And he asks him, are you one of our men or are you one of the enemies? And the reason Yoshua is concerned is because he doesn't understand why anyone would be standing at night with their sword outstretched facing the camp of Israel. So the angel says, I'm neither. I am an angel who's supposed to help God's army. I'm here to help the people of Israel. In the days of Moshe, I wanted to come, and Moshe in his prayer said, I don't want any angels, only you, God. I'm only willing to continue if you be with the Jewish people. So I couldn't come then. But now I've come to help you conquer Jericho, because Jericho is territory which it's impossible to conquer. The wall is as wide as it is tall. It's a wall that's very tall and very, very wide. There's no way you could break that wall and enter. So I'm here to help you. When Yoshua recognizes it's an angel, he falls on his face and he asks the angel, why is your sword outstretched? Have we done something wrong? And the angel says, yes, you've done two things wrong. You haven't brought sacrifices. You haven't learned Torah. Yoshua says, over which one have you come? He says, I came here at night. I came here now. Now at night, you guys should be learning Torah. By day, you're busy with the war, but preparing for war, advancing to war. But at night, what's your excuse? Why aren't you learning Torah? So Yoshua learned from that. And in the future wars, Yoshua will ensure that people learn Torah day and night, and especially at nights when they're not in battle, that they're taking the time to learn Torah. The angel tells Yoshua, take off your shoes, you're standing on holy territory, and now we're going to advance into Jericho, we're going to advance to conquer Jericho. Jericho closes its gates. They have metal metal sheets that cover the gates, and there's no way to penetrate the city of Jericho. And God tells Yoshua, you're going to see, I'm going to let you conquer Jericho and its king, even though its king and its soldiers are very mighty, you will take them down. Here's what you do. Every day, you go around the city. Now, Jericho was a very big city. It took a few hours to to go around the city. You take seven Kohanim, and they will carry seven long ram horns before you. You take the Aron, the Ark, and for 6 days you go around Jericho. On the seventh day, which is going to be Shabbos, so you will go around the city seven times. And then, when you blow the final blast, the long blast at the Tkiah Gedola, at the end, everyone will blow their shofros with you, and the city's walls will be swallowed into the ground. Because technically, if it fall over, you'd still have the same protection, right? It was as wide as it was high. So the walls will get swallowed into the ground, and then everyone will be able to attack. So Yoshua commands the Kohanim to advance with seven shofros before the Aron. And the nation is told, you guys walk behind, and you'll follow the Aron as it goes around the city. And for 6 days, they do it. The tribe of Dan is bringing up the rear. And Yoshua tells the people, you guys have to be quiet as we go around Jericho. I don't know if you could imagine the scene. Imagine all the soldiers are standing on the walls. The people of Israel are walking around in silence around the city. And only the Kohanim, who are leading the way, are blowing trumpets. Seven trumpets. Seven shofros. And the rest of the nation is walking in silence. And they're making this huge circle around Jericho. They're walking a distance away from Jericho, so they can't shoot at them from the walls. They're staying out of distance, you know, where they can't be hit. And the people, all they see for 6 days is this nation going all around the city. For a few hours, they go around. And comes Shabbos, they get up bright and early, and at the crack of dawn, the whole nation starts surrounding the city once, and they blow the trumpets. Twice, and they blow the trumpets. A third time. They hit the seventh time, and the Kohanim blow their Tkiah Gedola, and suddenly the whole nation starts blasting their shofros. It must have been late in the day, Shabbos afternoon. It took a few hours each time they went around. Each revolution took a few hours. And the walls cave in. The walls sink into the ground. And the nation charges the city. They conquer the city, and they decide, being that they conquer it on Shabbos, they're not going to take any of the loot. And Yoshua warns them. He says, anything you find has to be dedicated to the temple. He sends in the spies. He tells them, go bring Rachav and her family. We promised her we'd save her. Go save them. I don't know how they were saved if the whole wall caved in. Did their house stay erect above? You know, everything caved in except their house. I don't know. I don't know how it worked. Maybe they were in the rubble and they dug them out. I don't know. So they bring Rachav out with her father and mother and her siblings and all her family, and they leave him out of the camp by Israel, and they burn down the whole city. Jericho is destroyed. And Yoshua makes a curse. He says, cursed is the person who rebuilds this city. Whoever rebuilds the city will lose their firstborn son when they lay the foundations, and then they'll lose all their children as they rebuild the city, and when they finally put up the doors of the city, they will lose their youngest son. And later, as we learn Tanakh, we will learn how this curse came true. Later on, someone will rebuild Yericho. One of the blessings of living in the land of Israel, my son learned this curse in Joshua, and he hadn't yet learned the Book of Kings, so he didn't yet learn that it was rebuilt in the time of the kings. So we were traveling once to Kochav Yaakov. It was a night. We were traveling back from Kochav Yaakov. And as we're standing by a turn, he looks at a sign, and the sign points in the opposite direction, and it says, to Jericho. So he looks at it, and his eyes turn real big, and he looks at me and says, Jericho? Who rebuilt Jericho? That's the beauty. You live in Israel. So he learned that Jericho was destroyed by Yoshua, and that Yoshua made a curse that whoever rebuilds it will lose all their kids. So he looks at me and says, who did it? And what happened to their kids? Right? That's what he learned. So now he sees the sign Jericho. You live it. That's one of the beautiful things. We live here in Israel. Our children live the Tanakh. Now the problem is that even though Yoshua had said that no one may eat or take anything from the loot of Jericho, Jews did. From the chosen tribe of Judea, there was a man by the name of Serpent, otherwise known as Achan. Achan means a snake, a serpent. Achan took from the loot. And this isn't the first time There were two other times that we made a pact that no one would take from the loot in the days of Moshe. And every time he stole from the loot, and his family knew about it, and his tribe knew about it, and everyone said, "Shh, I won't tell, you don't tell." We learned in the parasha last week that when we enter the land of Israel, we have mutual responsibility, right? We have aravut. That's one of the things the Torah says. Now we've entered the land of Israel, and this time his family and relatives are all going to see he's stealing from the loot, and everyone's going to go, "Shh," but that's not going to work this time. So the next city we're going to attack is the city of Ai. And Ai is east of Beit El. So that would put, we'll see in a minute, where to draw Ai on the map. What? It's a small city called Ai. Small city called Ai. And he sends spies, and the spies come back, and they tell him, "You don't have to send the whole army. That city is easy pickings. You have to send only a few thousand men, 2,000-3,000 men, and you'll take down the whole city. Don't make everyone work to go up to Ai." So he sends 3,000 men. They attack and they lose, and the people of the Ai kill 36 men, and the 3,000 men come running back to camp, and everyone feels faint. Everyone looks at it and says, "We lost. Should have been an easy battle. We lost." And when Yeshua sees they lost the first battle, he tears his clothing. He throws himself before the ark, and he brings the elders, and they cry before Hashem, and they mourn, and Yeshua weeps. He says, "Hashem, what'd you bring us into the land of Israel? To fall in the hands of our enemies? We could have stayed on the other side of the Jordan. We had a huge territory there. Please, Hashem, what am I going to say after my people turned their backs and ran away from the enemies? Everyone's going to hear this, and now the nations are going to re-strengthen themselves and come back and try to annihilate us. What's going to be with your great name, Hashem?" And Hashem tells Yeshua, "Get up, it's all your fault. Who? What are you throwing yourself down before me? Who asked you to dedicate the loot of Jericho and tell people they cannot benefit from it? I didn't ask that. Ah, but you did it. So now you're responsible because the people have sinned. They've transgressed my covenant. I told them to be faithful. They took away from the loot. They stole. They lied. So the Jewish people won't be able to stand up to their enemies if they don't live up to their world, to their word. You got to take the person to task who stole from the loot. So tomorrow, find out." And Yeshua turns to Hashem and says, "Who took?" And here we'll go off on a small tangent, and with that we'll end tonight's learning of Yeshua, because it's a very important tangent. Let's see if I can find it. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara tells us that once Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was giving class, and someone was sitting next to him who had eaten garlic. So he said, "Who ate garlic here?" So his top student got up and walked out. He hadn't eaten garlic, but he knew that if he doesn't walk out, so then someone will be embarrassed. So he didn't want someone else to be embarrassed. So he walked out. And the other students saw him walk out, so they all got up and walked out, and with that, class was over. So, So the next morning, Rebbe's son met him and said, "Why'd you do such a thing?" So he said, "I learned from my predecessors." Here we go. Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. So Rabbi Chia, his top student, walked out. Everyone else walked out. The next morning, Rabbi Shimon asked Rabbi Chia, "Why'd you get Dad all upset? You ruined his class." He said, I didn't eat the garlic, but I didn't want to embarrass anyone. And I learned it. Where did he learn it from? Rabbi Meir. One day Rabbi Meir was given class. And a woman walks into class and says, one of the guys here offered me to marry me. And there are three ways in which a man can marry a woman. One way is by being intimate with her. So one of your guys here was intimate with me and told me he's marrying me with that night we spent together. And now I'm married. I'm not sure to who. So Rabbi Meir said, just a second, I'm writing you a divorce right now. And he wrote her a divorce contract so that the student who had sinned, who had behaved improperly, wouldn't be embarrassed. No one would know which one it was. And every student got up and wrote a divorce contract to that woman. And then she was divorced because one of them, whichever one had done it, had divorced her. No one had to reveal that they were the one. Obviously, it was a one-night stand. No one had an interest in moving on with it. She wasn't interested and the guy wasn't interested. But he did something improper. So this way, she was free to go to the marketplace. And where did Rabbi Meir learn it from? From Shmuel HaKatan. What happened with Shmuel HaKatan? We have a rule. That's why it shows up in Tractate Sanhedrin. That when the court decides to make it a leap year, in order to be one of the court, you have to have a private invitation. So they need seven people to be part of the court. So Rabban Gamliel said, I want the following seven people to come up with me to the attic to decide whether we're making it a leap year. They get up to the attic, they take a count, there are eight. So Rabban Gamliel says, who came up without permission? So Shmuel, this is Shmuel HaKatan, Shmuel says, me. And he says, I didn't really come here to be a part of the court, I just wanted to learn how you guys do it. So Rabban Gamliel says, stick around, son. All the leap years of the world are fit to be done by you. Because in fact, he was invited. When Rabban Gamliel told his top student, you choose the top seven, Shmuel HaKatan was one of them. But when he realized that someone here is going to be embarrassed, someone came up who was not invited, then Shmuel HaKatan said, I'm the one who came extra. I just wanted to learn. So that's who Rabbi Meir learned it from. And where did Shmuel HaKatan learn it from? He learned it from us. There's another story I'm skipping, but where do we learn it from? I'll tell you the other story on the way. We did all the other ones, should do this one too. When they came up with Ezra to rebuild the second temple, so then there was a leader, Shechaniah ben Yechiel, who came to speak to Ezra about the fact that they had all intermarried. He hadn't intermarried, but everyone else here in Israel had intermarried. Not everyone, many of the people in Israel had intermarried. So he came and said, we all intermarried, and now we have to make amends, we have to purify the Jewish people. Why did he say we all intermarried, his wife was Jewish? So it's not to embarrass those who did as opposed to those who didn't. So he just said, we all intermarried. So from him, Shmuel HaKatan learned that better a person embarrass himself rather than cause embarrassment to others. Where did Shechaniah ben Yechiel learn it from? He learned it from Hashem. Because when Yeshua turns to Hashem in our story and says, who stole? Who took from the loot? Hashem says, you want me to tattletale? You want me to tell you who took? I'm not going to do that. You have to figure it out a different way. And that's where we'll pick up, Be'ezrat Hashem, tomorrow, how Yeshua is supposed to figure it out, who took from the loot. That's where we'll leave off for today.